An absolute honor to welcome to the Found Generation podcast a dear friend of mine who I've wanted to have on the show for a long time. I'm, of course, talking about Cliff DeBull Augustin, Brooklyn's pride, Philadelphia originally. Cliff, you work at SiriusXM Radio, full disclosure. We used to work together at ESPN Radio in Bristol, Connecticut. That is where we first met. You were actually, I think, the first person I met when I walked into Bristol's campus for my interview. I think it was you and Mikey C, the legend himself. So me and you actually go way back. So it's so good to have you on. There's much things I want to talk to you about today, but welcome. Thank you for being here.
First of all, thank you. And do you remember that experience of me, the first thing I said to you?
Oh, I do not. But I remember you had a much different haircut than you do now. You had like a little flat top.
Yeah, I had the curly top going on, but I kept it going.
You put on a lot of muscle since then. You're shredded now.
Chill, stop, man. Stop trying to talk to y'all, man. I'm just a regular guy that just likes to be healthy, man. That's it.
Amen. So over the last couple of years, you've kind of, I know you've changed your behaviors, I'd say, to more healthy. So what did you do exactly? What changes did you make?
Honestly, this really kind of started, and I'll be honest with you, this really kind of started in college, right? So towards the end of my senior year, you know how in college you go out. I mean, just for you, I know you didn't really like going out at all. But for me, I liked being on the scene towards the end of my, you know, my end of my college tenure. And I'm going out every night, like we drinking, you know, 50 cent Miller Lights every night, dollar well mixed drinks at the college bars. Mind you, this is like 4 or 5 times a night, nights a week. And like, I'm getting bigger. Right. And then one weekend in the spring, I'll never forget this, one weekend in the spring, I go back to the crib. I grew up in Philly, so I grew up in this area called Elkins Park. So it's probably like about 30, 40 minutes from Temple University, give or take. So I'm back at like my parents' house, right? I'm in the backyard and my mom was just like, yo, you getting fat. Like my mom told me that. Yeah, my mom told me that. And then like ever since then, I had graduated, I want to say like 2 weeks after that. And then my boy was just like, yo, if you're really trying to get in shape, just come to the gym with me. Like while you're looking for a job and you're kind of in limbo once you graduate from school. So after I had graduated from school, I moved right back to the crib. And then we just started working out 5 days a week. And then I fell in love with it. And then after that, like I started like kind of researching like ways to diet and like different ways that, people get healthier. And like, I didn't want to be just like the big dude. And my parents weren't always like the healthiest people. So I had to make that change for myself. And it really catapulted. I will never forget this. I'll never forget that scene. Cause you know how like your mom is, like, she's going to keep it real with you. You know what I mean? So my mom kept the road with me. She was just like, yo, you getting fat, and like was dead ass serious. And I was just like, all right, like when your mom's saying that to you, now it's time to like really make a change, you know? So that's when it started.
That's amazing. I actually, after my first summer working at ESPN, I, as you may remember, I was like, mm-hmm. and a lot of us experience this sure. as well, you know, being away from home, like new job, like new lifestyle, like your first thing, and then you're working nights, weekends, not the most glamorous. So sure. your body's all over the place. You're a bit depressed. I went home and saw my parents for the first time and I was so skinny. Like yeah. I'm already skinny. Mm-hmm. I didn't have much weight to lose, but I lost like 15 pounds from that. Man. So in the reverse, my mom actually said, you're so skinny.
You lost 15 pounds from your 120 pound frame at the time. My God, you must've been like a stick figure walking in the house.
I know. Like when we talk about, me and our friend Connor and Jake, we all watch fights together sometimes. And so I think about the weight cutting aspect to MMA fighting or wrestling is crazy. I weigh 170 pounds right now, just normal. If I were fighting, mm-hmm. I would have to cut to 145 pounds. Exactly. That's probably where I would fight at. I cannot imagine losing 25 pounds off of this already frail body.
But yeah, I remember like they're not like frail, you know what I mean? Like those dudes got a lot more going to them. So it's easier to make that cut. And then obviously it's still a difficult process, but then once they make the cut, you know, they eat like 2-3 meals afterwards and then they're like right back to their normal body weight. So
I know
that process still fascinates me. I think that's like the most fascinating part of being a fighter is having to drain your body like that. And then, you know, a day or two later, get in the ring and, you know, fight for your life.
Yeah. Literally 12 to 24 hours later, you have to be in the best shape of your life and then go 25 minutes to try to win a title. It's insane.
And while somebody's trying to kill you.
Exactly. In front of people.
It's crazy. I love that. I love that sport so much, man. It's a dope sport.
Well, speaking of sports, so your job has taken you to, you left ESPN, you now work for Sirius XM, mm-hmm. satellite radio mm-hmm. in New York City. So I kind of want to talk to you about life in New York City. We actually mm-hmm. had Connor on the Found Generation a couple weeks ago, and he was kind of talking more shit about New York City than a lot of people do. So I'm kind of very curious, you know, you grew up in Philadelphia or yeah. the Philadelphia suburbs, so you know city life, but obviously New York City is a different kind of city. So what are your early takeaways?
So you got to remember, I was living in Connecticut for 5.5 years. True. So that's kind of like true. The transition really is going from being in Connecticut to being in New York and how much more fast paced that is. Like I've gone to New York back and forth all throughout my life. Like my dad's cousin, who's my sister's godfather, lives in Queens. Like we used to go back in here in summer all the time from Philly to New York. We used to go to parties from Philly to New York from my dad's, when he used to own a company. We used to go to parties back and forth. Like the Haitian community is not that big. So we literally come here for the night and then go right back up to, you know, go right back to Philly. We'd go to Times Square. We'd do a whole bunch of stuff. While I was living in Connecticut, we used to come down to New York every so often, hang out, party, whatever, kick it with the friends. I have a bunch of friends out here because I went to Temple. Everybody from Temple is like from New York. So we'd all just come out here and we just kick it, meet up with whoever, go to an event, go to a game, go to Mets, go to Knicks, go to Nets, you know, whatever event is out here. So like I've always like kind of been fond of it. When you live in New York, though, it is a different beast. Like, especially with like I have number one, especially with the price gouging that's going on right now. It's actually insane how people are still willing to come out here knowing that it costs like, you know, $2,000-$3,000 in rent. You got to make a certain amount to live out here pretty much. The food situation is crazy because the prices at like the grocery store are like damn near like doubling everything up. I just think like Connor's like more so reflecting on the times of what it is right now. You know what I mean? Like the times are really actually like super crazy here in New York in terms of just pricing, in terms of capacity, in terms of just the amount of people that live out here. But I will say on the flip side, it is a fun place to live in. There's a lot to do. There's a lot of different places to go. There's a lot of scenic experiences. Like I'll walk down the street here. I live in Sunset Park and there's literally a park called Sunset Park right there. It overviews the Hudson River. You'll see the Statue of Liberty right there. And then you'll see all of downtown Manhattan from that viewpoint. It's such a beautiful view. Like you just sit there, you get a blanket, you kick it and you just let the sunset fall. And it's crazy. But I will say this, with living in New York, there's a lot of pros and cons and checks and balances you have to deal with in terms of just pricing for everything, in terms of just the capacity, in terms of like parking, if you have a car, the ways you have to get around the city, like you got to take like two subways to get somewhere. That's like, and it's sad because subway is like the most efficient way to get around the city. Like you can't, if you drive from Brooklyn to Manhattan, that might take you a solid like hour or so. That subway ride might cut that in half just because the subway is just a quicker way. There's no traffic to the subway unless the subway actually like breaks down and stuff. So it's just a lot. It's a lot of adjusting that you have to get used to. And Connor is more so, he was used to like Atlanta. He's used to Connecticut where you can just drive freely. You can park up anywhere. You can't do that out here. You can't just go to your restaurant and just like drive up there. Like it, number one, you're not going to find any parking. Number two, you can't like stop. Like you have to get on the subway. Like you have to find certain ways to do things. The Ubers out here cost like a gajillion dollars. I think he's more so reflecting on the times that we live in. But if he was deep down to his core being honest about New York City, I think he'd say New York City is a dope place. I think it is. I think it's a cool place to live.
So given everything that you just said about it, do you think it is worth the extra hassle, the extra dollars?
Oh, I would say so. I think it is. I just think there's just so many cool experiences that you can see here, just different rooftops, different, especially if you're a sports fan, like just going to Madison Square, going to Barclays, going to the Yankee Stadium, going to Citi Field, going to just historic parks like Rucker Park, going to all the different parks in Brooklyn that Brooklyn has to offer, all the different food spots that are out here, just the different vibes and different neighborhoods. Like Crown Heights is like more so of like a Black neighborhood, whereas where I live in Sunset Park is more so like Mexican, Puerto Rican, and Asian, to whereas like if you go up to, I don't know, where Connor lives in Midwood, it's more so of like, it's more Jewish. Like there's just so many different vibes out here that you got to appreciate and you got to understand different cultures in order to really respect what New York is and just how that melting pot does come together and how you just see so many different types of people walking around the city. I think that's super cool. And I think the experiences out here are well worth it too. Like, there's nothing better than just going out on like a Saturday at 1 o'clock noon and just hanging with a bunch of people that just came into the city, or a bunch of your friends that already live out here, and y'all just go around the city just for the day and just get the vibe. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you generally feel safe, whether you're taking public transit or walking around?
I generally feel safe, but that might not be the case for other people. Me personally, I come with the mentality of like, all right, like I'm from a city, like Philly is a wild place in itself. Like, I'm from Philly too. So like, I kind of understand what goes on out here. I do genuinely feel safe because the neighborhood I live in is more so of like, it's very much like a neighborhood of just families, and it's real quiet. There's a lot of like younger people moving in here as well. There's not like a lot of like crazy criminal activity that goes here. Although I will say, respect to what happened on the subway a few months back, I'm not trying to, you know, disrespect anybody that lives out here. Respect to the people that were harmed in that event, which was very unfortunate in itself. But I generally feel safe in my neighborhood, and especially like if you go in like places in Manhattan, you generally feel safe. But it does kind of scare me, just like how crazy the subway stuff has been going on. Like I said, with the subway shooter situation, with the somebody actually got shot going to brunch, mid 11 o'clock in the morning. I saw on Friday some dude got his face slashed on the subway in Queens. Like, it's a lot that goes on to that, and I feel like the city really hasn't really done much to protect its regular citizens from not being fearful of these situations. However, I don't ride the subway all day every day, so I don't, you know, I'm not really like worried about that. Like, I'll ride the subway like twice a week, I guess, is like probably like my average. So I don't really need to hop on there way too much. If I was like a kid, you know, a parent raising a kid going to school every day from Clinton Hill, or might be coming from Bay Ridge or something like that, and going all out to downtown Brooklyn, like, I get it. Those are some pretty long subway rides, and that could be real dangerous. And I see why people could be super fearful of that, for sure.
Now, you and I both work in the media, and a common thing that you hear for people in our field is that if you want to make something of yourself, there's two places to be: New York City and Los Angeles, just because of their, you know, what they mean to the entertainment industry. Do you subscribe to that notion that in order to make something of yourself, you need to be in a place like New York City?
Absolutely not. You don't need to be in New York or LA. I feel like, if anything, everything's kind of like going to like the whole remote status, especially in like the podcast game, where you can, like, you live in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Like, you can record literally from anywhere, and you might have to pop up into a different city, what, maybe 10, 15, 20 times a year, if that. Like, you don't need to live in New York. You don't need to live in LA in order to make something, this is not the 90s where you're trying to get a record deal and you're trying to wait for somebody outside of the Universal building, or you're trying to wait for, you know, for Jay-Z outside of Rock Nation. Like, you don't need to do that no more. You don't need to wait for an exec to like find your tape. Like, everything is done over the internet, basically. You know, we lived in Bristol, Connecticut, right? Like, you don't need to live in New York or LA in order to make something of yourself. I just think younger people like the life of living in New York, of living in LA, because those are generally fun cities, and young people like to have fun and go out and enjoy themselves and do different things. But the old notion of you have to live in New York City, that might have been the case maybe like 10 years ago, probably, like maybe 10, 15 years ago. But now I feel like you can live like damn near anywhere and be cool, because a lot of people just fly in and out of different cities anyway. Like, they'll go somewhere for a couple of days and then leave. Like, you don't need to live in New York or LA in order to be successful in the media business at all.
Now, you primarily work from home. You do go into the offices at Sirius, which are in Manhattan. How are you feeling about working from home now that, I mean, the pandemic is not over, but things are much more back to normal than they ever have been. So how are you feeling about working from home at this point?
Working from home is like, it's cool. You know me though. When I'm in the office, like, you know, I like to be around there chopping it up with everybody, talking, you know, talking shit to people, going around saying what's up to everybody. Like, I'm more of like a friendly guy, but now, like, I'm kind of used to it. Like, I'll just hop on Slack, say what's up to people on there. Like, yo, what you doing? Or, you know, my friends will like FaceTime me during the day sometimes. And the reason why a lot of the work from home stuff is for me is because like I'll work like kind of late at like nighttime when we record stuff. Just like you, most sporting events happen at, you know, 8, 9 o'clock at night. In USC's case, like the biggest stuff will happen at, you know, midnight. midnight on the East Coast, 1 o'clock. So a lot of the times you do have to be up. Up like pretty late. So the office may not generally be like a thing that you need to do. But I think the office, there's a benefit of just meeting with people, talking to people, shaking hands. Like in the hallways, when you get to rub elbows with some certain people that might be important and might be able to help you out later down the line.
For sure.
For me personally, I just like just talking to people and just chopping up with everybody. Like that's like my thing. I'm a people's person. I just like hanging out with people, saying what's up, being around everybody, you know, argue about sports, whatever the case may be. Say, you know, hey, the Eagles taking it all the way to shit, something yeah. like that. That's like my vibe. That's more so why I like the office. But as far as like the working aspect of it, I don't mind working from the crib at all, really.
During most of the pandemic, when you were at ESPN, you were still going into the office, right?
Yeah,
you were one of the foot soldiers.
Yeah.
I was fortunate enough to wear at ESPN, and then after leaving at all my jobs, were like, I have been able to work from home. I'm a work from home employee. And now I'm realizing that I need to get back into the office. And so I'm going to the Spotify offices in Boston or New York City when I'm there. And I didn't realize how much I had kind of forgotten how to do what you were just talking about, just kind of chopping it up with your coworkers. For example, I went into Boston's offices a couple weeks ago, and every Thursday they kind of do like a happy hour at 5 p.m. where like they literally have, you know, serve you alcoholic drinks and food at 5 p.m. after the workday. And I didn't know any of these people. They're not my coworkers at The Ringer. There's like general Spotify IT people. And so we were doing happy hour, and I showed up a little late because I was finishing up a podcast that I had to get out. And there were three groups of people talking, and I felt like the odd one out. I'm like, I don't know any of these people. Am I just going to insert myself into some conversation? And I didn't know what to do, and I kind of froze, and I just like grabbed a hard seltzer and I left. And like I had totally forgotten how to do that.
How you freeze? Man, you froze up in the office of your coworkers and just like, since I don't know anybody, I'm dipping. Like, yeah. Irish goodbye that whole situation?
Irish goodbye the whole situation. I, like, had, like, a mini panic attack. I was like, oh, my God, I forgot how to interact with people I don't know.
That's crazy. You should have just been like, hey, I'm Troy. Like, I live in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. I'm never really here, but what's up, guys? What's going on? Like, I've never really had that problem just, like, going up to, like, random people and just sparking up a conversation and just talking about stuff. But that's just me. Like, it depends on what type of personality you have. Me personally, like, I have so many different moves, but for the most part, like you saw whenever we were working together, like I just like I said, I just like talking to people because we all had the same thing in common. We all love sports. So all we did was just be in there and talk shit about sports. It might be different where Spotify, you know, there's an IT guy. So you might be talking about like, oh, how to reset a server and how to, you know, make something look different with different coding and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, you're still humans, right?
Yeah.
So you could have just said like, hey, what's good? I'm Troy.
I know.
How you guys doing? But that's the thing though, is like, I don't know how good remote work is as far as it goes for helping people so better, you know, be able to socialize better. You know what I mean? Like, I think the office does have that type of perk of where there's conversations that are sparked more so just naturally, right? Like there's nothing to do with work. It's just like, yo, you saw what Diddy said last night on the award show, or yo, you heard that new Lil Durk song, or yo, you heard such and such's album, or hey, did you see that dunk from last night? Like just the regular nature discussions has nothing to do with the job.
Yeah.
Like that's like, I think that's very much needed in some aspect, but I think remotely you can still kind of make it happen within your group.
So on this podcast, you know, I like to focus on just kind of navigating life as an early adult. It's more difficult than it has ever been before. I'm reading this book right now, which basically outlines, it's called the Defining Decade, where we are kind of the first generation, maybe some a little bit of the last generation, where your 20s have kind of been this time where there's no set definition for what it's supposed to be, because our parents, generations before that, was like, okay, you know, I'm thinking like the baby boomers in the 1950s. You fight in World War II, and then you go get married and have kids, and you're 23, and like now you're a parent. Like, you don't really have any time for exploring, for wandering, for trying to figure out what you want to do, whereas we do now. And there's no, after college, like, you can go a bazillion different directions. Your life is no longer scripted out for you. So your 20s can take you all sorts of places. So I'm curious to know what it's been like, or what you're kind of thinking right now, because I think you're 29, right?
Correct, yeah.
You're 29. You're almost hitting 30. Societal expectations say that 30 is an age where you kind of need to have your shit figured out. You know, you need to have, if you're not married already, you need to be with the person that you're going to marry. You got to have your career settled down and stable, and you got to have a whole bunch of things figured out. So I'm wondering, are you feeling any pressure at age 29 to have it figured out?
None at all, man. Me personally, like, I have goals for myself, but to put an age on it, that's just going to frustrate you even more in the process. So like, I was never the guy that was like, yo, at 25, I'm going to do this. And by 30, I'm going to do this. And by 35, I'm going to have that. I was always the guy who was like, look, man, everybody just got a different race, got a different speed. People come from different backgrounds, and that completely helps you in whatever you want to do. People have different career aspirations. Whereas, like, let's say like somebody wanted to be like, you know, a high level bank broker or something like that. Like, that's a different career path you can go to, and you kind of can rise through the ranks in a different way. Like, working in media is like not like that at all. Like, you kind of have to go from place to place and kind of meet different people, and things change when places buy this and someone acquires that, and people move from this company to that. Like, there's so much interchanging that goes on within the whole media landscape. And I knew that going into it too. But I was never like scared. Like, I never was scared of like not being at a certain point by the age of 30, or not being, and not having like a wife by the age of, you know, 30, or not trying to, not having a house or something like that. Like, I've always just said, like, look, like, as long as I'm doing solid for myself, I can, you know, pay my bills, I can rest my head on a pillow every night, and, you know, I can be happy mentally, physically, emotionally, I'm cool. Like, you know what I mean? Like, all that stuff comes, you know, comes down the line. Like, I'm not just going to like go out and hunt that, because if I go out and hunt that and I fail at doing it, that's probably going to hurt me even more mentally. You know what I mean? So I'm not going to do that. I'm playing my own race. I'm going to keep going hard for everything I want in life. And, you know, hopefully God will bless me one day, and hopefully I'll have even bigger opportunities to keep doing big things. That's how I look at it.
Do your parents give you any crap for that mindset?
Yeah, my mom 100% does. Like, my mom is like, yo, when are you going to bring home a nice girl for me? Or when are you going to, you know,
give me a grandchild?
Yeah, like, my mom is more so, definitely just more so with the relationship stuff. Like, she knows with the career thing, like, I've been grinding for years at this, and I'm going to keep going hard just no matter what. And she knows that. She understands that. And I feel like I'm like good at this. So why quit? And I've made like a decent solid living so far. But yeah, it's definitely more so with the kids aspect, and more so of like finding like a girlfriend, finding a wife and doing all that. And I'm just like, look, man, to society is just so much different nowadays. Like, the way dating works nowadays is through what? It's through these, right?
Yeah.
Like, nowadays, like, that's what dating is now. It's like, it's all through like an app. It's a swipe this, and we gonna meet here or that. And then the whole culture surrounding all that. And then the whole people wanting to play games and stuff like that. A lot of times you just don't be having time for that. So it's hard it's hard to really give your time to somebody else and try to seek, you know, try to seek relationships, to try to seek some type of compatibility, not knowing, you know, maybe not knowing what the other person's intentions are. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's tough. Like, it's just, it's not as easy as, you know, meeting your boyfriend back in elementary school in fourth grade, and Tommy and Jenny married and they live in the same town and they got a white picket fence with three kids, and they hang out at the local pub down the street and they go to the market every Sunday. They go to church and they watch, you know, they watch the Giants in Jersey, you know, every week. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't work like that anymore. It's just not as simple as that. Everything is just so rapid paced now, and people are just so up and out, and people don't show as much love anymore. Like, a lot of people, I feel like people are a lot more guarded than ever nowadays. So I feel like that's the toughest aspect, is just cracking somebody and breaking down and really getting to that person's heart, really getting to that woman's heart, and trying to maintain a relationship. I think that's the hardest aspect of it all.
Why do you say that people are more guarded nowadays? What do you mean?
I feel like just with social media, not wanting to get their heart broken, people don't want to put themselves out there. Like, heartbreak is like a lot, especially a lot on people, especially, you know, we talk about mental health a lot nowadays, right? Like, imagine going through like a nasty, crazy breakup or you know, you missed out on, and let's say like you're a woman and you missed out on another chance at a guy or whatever the case may be. It like, you don't want to deal with even more mental pressures of trying to have a great job, make a decent living, put food on your table. And then on top of that, now you don't have you're dealing with like, I don't want to make it sound as crazy as it is, but the loss of that certain companion or someone that you were probably with for a solid amount of time, or hell, maybe it could be a short amount of time, and you probably thought it was going somewhere, but then they probably had different ideas. You know what I mean? Right. I feel like people are just a lot more guarded and just don't want their heart broken and don't want to waste that time.
Gotcha. Yeah. Going back to what we were just talking about before, in terms of kind of like feeling societal pressure, yeah. I think we need to do a better job of adjusting our expectations when we have kind of set 30 as this get your shit together age. 100%. That age was set, you know, in the 1970s, the 60s, the 70s, when the life expectancy was 70. The life expectancy now, thanks to modern science and technology, is like 90. So why can't 40 be the get your shit together age? So I think we kind of need to keep that in the back of our minds as we go through, to be like, yo, we don't need to be getting married at 30. We don't need to be rushing into relationships just because we feel like we have to, and then we end up with the wrong person, which, like you said, just creates more problems down the line for you than had you just been a little more patient.
Exactly. And I'm like, 30 has always been young though. Like, to me, like, I've never understood the whole 30 aspect. Like, obviously when you were a kid, right? And you like 15, you 18, you like a teenager, a high school age or whatever. You see the OGs on the block. They're like 30 years old. They got a nice car. They got a girl with a fat butt. They got some rims on their car. They got a little apartment that they got. They got some J's on their feet. They got some nice clothes. You're like, y'all want to be like that guy. Like, he's dope. He's super cool. Like, but then you realize at the end of the day, he might be struggling to pay his damn rent.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
30 is really a young ass age for anything. Like, how many CEOs are 30 years old? You know, like, how many top level bosses are 30 and under? Like, the Forbes 30 for 30, like, a lot of those people are really just like accelerating at what they do and probably have created something big. Mm-hmm. A lot of people aren't at 30 are still developing in their careers. Think about it. When you're 30, chances are you did your undergrad and you probably graduated at 22, right? And then maybe you did a master's or whatever. You done your master's, you get that by 24, 25. All right, my master's is done. Now I'm trying to look for a job. And then you start out, you know, your first early job, a little bullshit, early entry-level job. You do that for 3 years or whatever. And then you probably get a raise. And then now, you know, by 30, you've been 5 years into the workforce and doing something that you probably genuinely like. Like, a lot of times people can change their career by 30. So think about how early 30 is after the entry level point of your career, to whereas, you know, you're probably at a certain level by the age of 28, 29, depending on how long you've been pursuing that career. And then that's not going to be anywhere near the top, you know? Yeah. And then boom, 30 hits and you're just like, oh, okay. Like, I'm still like I'm not the biggest dog in the world. Like, I don't have the most money in the world, but guess what? At least I'm doing solid for myself. At least each night I can put some food on my table, God willing, you know, like, at least I can still hang out with some friends and maybe get a White Claw or two if I go out. Maybe I could, maybe I could buy some fly clothes every once in a while. Like, that to me is what 30 really is. Like, I don't think 30 is more so I need the wife, I need the dog, I need the kids, I need the white picket fence, I need, I need a nice Benz. Like, 30 is such a young developmental transitional age, because then a lot of people are, like I just mentioned earlier, might be changing their careers at 30, bro. Mm. Like, there's so many things that can happen at 30 and it's still super young, man. It's still like, you are, you know, fresh out of your first dumpy apartment where you didn't have any furniture and your TV was probably 30 inches wide. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy, the expectations that were put on us, especially in today's society where everything, inflation has gone up just last month by like 8.6% or something like that. like, it's crazy to think that we could do the same things at 30 that our parents could do back in the day. Or yeah. Hell, even people 30 that were 30, 10, 15 years ago could do. It's just not the same. Everything changes. The society just changes. Everything's just different. So
I feel like you've got a really good sense of perspective, and I fall victim to this, sometimes losing this perspective. I know that, hey, as long as I've got a roof, a pillow, food on the table, the ability to meet all of my needs, I'm good. I've got no reason to complain. And then I think big picture, think of 60% of the world doesn't have that. I think that's really important, because I think we all get caught up in social media fuels this, of course.
I'm telling you, bro, it's another. The Instagram society, bro. It's the Instagram society we live in. It really is. Like, you scrolling up and down the timeline and you see your favorite celebrity. Like, I probably scroll through my timeline right now. The first person I'm going to see is probably a little baby out there with 30 chains on his neck, popping on a PJ with a Louis V bag and some designer shoes and a crazy outfit that might cost him like 20K. And I'm like, damn, I wish I was like that. But I know in the back of my mind, I'm like, bro, he got it out a different way. It's just, we are all not the same. Everyone can do that. It's just different. And I totally get it.
Yeah.
Like, people need to realize that. Like, Instagram should not be... Instagram is destroying people's minds, straight up.
Seriously.
Instagram is really destroying people's minds. Like, especially women, like young women. I feel bad because they see the girls with the botched, not, I don't want to say with the botched bodies, but the fixed bodies. You know what I mean? Or they see the Alice Coopers of the world out there flexing on Instagram in the back of her, you know, her limo or whatever she's getting transported in, with some designer shoes, hanging out with celebrities in New York and LA, on top of the best rooftops, private bar areas with the flyest clothes. Like, I get it, that image, you want to be that image, but at the same time, you're just two different people. It's just, there's so many more yous than there's of that one Alex Cooper. You know what I mean? There's 20 Alex Coopers, there's 20 million of that regular girl. Like, it's hard to be that. It's so hard to be that. We need to stop doing it.
And then it leads you to be wanting everything that Alex Cooper has. By the way, Alex Cooper,
shout out to Spotify,
Spotify exclusive podcast.
Yeah,
it leads you to want what she has, and then you lose sight of what you do have, which then just fuels kind of like an unhappiness and comparison and depression cycle.
It destroys your mental, and I feel like that especially hits women a lot harder than it does men. Like, a lot of men probably want to flex, get a little bit of jewelry, have a nice car, have a girl, get some fly clothes, whatever the case may be. But I feel like women, it's like an image. It's like a real life, like, I want my body to look like this. I want to have that, you know, I want to have that boyfriend that, you know, I don't know. I forget who she went out with, but I know it was some baseball player at some point.
Oh, Noah Syndergaard.
Yeah, thank you. Like, I want to have like the millionaire boyfriend that can go out anywhere. We can go to any party we want, with all the top-notch celebrities, blah, 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 blah. Like, I feel like women really, really want that type of attention way more than men. And I think it's hurting our society, man. I really do. And I really think that's where, like, a lot of bullying starts, a lot of beefing starts, right off of Instagram and social media. It sucks, because Instagram can be such a good tool to teach, too.
Mm.
So at the same time, while it hurts a lot of people, I'm really trying to figure out if it damages more or does a lot more positive.
Mm. Yeah. I'm also worrying about that myself. It's great to connect with people. I love leaving. Like, I've never once trolled in my life. I've never once left a negative comment. Like, I love telling someone, like, oh, you look amazing. Oh, that looks like an awesome dinner or whatever it is. Like, I love leaving love.
Yeah.
But I also do probably subconsciously, like, scroll, see a story, whatever, and be like, oh, I wish I could live like that, or I want that. Or, like, I see life in New York City, and sometimes I'm like, I wonder if I'd be better off there, which I love the town I'm in right now, but there's a part of me, there's this wanderlust feeling that I have in me, like, I wonder if I would be better off there. That looks cool.
Yeah. And again, that goes from a person-to-person case, right? Like, a lot of people can deal with certain stuff mentally, whereas other people, just your mind just might be a little bit more fragile. You probably really can't, like, take that. That's why a lot of, you know, doctors and stuff will say, like, yo, just stay on social media if you can't handle it, you know? Me personally, like, I feel like I can handle it. Sure, subconsciously, I might want a big-ass chain, or subconsciously, I might want some designer clothes or some stuff like that I wish I could afford. But at the same time, like, I know that I'm doing good for myself, and I know I'm trying to reach a certain goal in my life, and that keeps me driven each and every single day. A lot of people might not think like that. Like sometimes I do, like, it will hit me in a certain way, like, damn, like, I wish I could have that. Or like, damn, I wish I could have that. A lot of times that really actually might hit me. But at the same time, I feel like, and people might be saying that about you too.
Right.
Right. But I don't even look at it as aspect of like, people might be saying that about you. It's more so of like, be thankful for what you have. You see what I'm saying? Like, be thankful for what you have before you think about what you don't have. That's where I'm getting at.
I want to close out on this topic, which is an important one. So on the podcast last year, I had our mutual friend, Alan Yates, and we kind of did a year check-in of race relations in America a year after the brutal killing of George Floyd. Mm-hmm. And so we had a really good conversation about that and progress made since then. And we're now 2 years, a little past 2 years out from that moment. And I remember actually listening to you on various podcasts because, you know, you remember pandemic, we were super focused in on this story and giving it the attention it deserved finally.
For sure.
And, you know, you were a voice that taught me a lot that, I mean, upstate New York, as we were just talking about, it's a pretty white place. I didn't know I'd never really been given a lens into the experience of a Black person in America. So I learned a lot about it and got a lot of value from it. So thank you. And I just kind of wanted now, 2+ years removed, kind of, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world right now. Wars, inflation out the wazoo, shootings everywhere, every day seemingly. Where do you think the issue of race relations kind of is right now, and how much has it improved since George Floyd? Is it improved?
I was going to say little to none, if anything. I feel like we still kind of back at step one. I mean, we have step zero, man. Like, if you look at it, the violence across America is going up, right? And what Black people really wanted was change and opportunity for more Black people to succeed, to come out of some of these violent neighborhoods that Black people live in. These neighborhoods are like worse than ever. Like, I'll be looking at a bunch of Philly pages. Mind you, I live out here in New York, so I get the news out here. I'll turn on, the first thing that happens to me when I turn on the TV is Spectrum One News. Two dead in the Bronx, you know, one person shot in Queens, shooting over here in Brooklyn. What people wanted was a change of community, was a change for opportunity for Black people. All we got was performative bullshit that came out of that. A lot of, we're going to rename this. We're going to tear down a statue over here. We're going to capitalize the letter Black when you talk about Black people.
Right.
That shit didn't do anything. Like, really what Black people and me is better education in these Black communities, so kids can have a chance to come out of these bad environments, more opportunities for actual real paying jobs, especially in a society today that has, the economy is like pretty much in the shitter right now. Just a chance to go to school and be something and not be in mounds of debt when you get out of school. I that's what people really needed, was opportunity, was change in a societal way, in like a structured societal way, to help people get more educated, to help people get real job opportunities, to help people's neighborhoods not be as violent, so these kids can not be raised in these wild ass places like Philly, like New York, like Chicago, like, you know, parts of Florida, like parts of California, whatever the case may be. That's what people really needed. But instead, we just got a lot of hearsay, a lot of lip service, and a lot of just, we'll fix that. We'll get to it. I don't think much has changed really at all. If anything, the police still harassing people. A lot of these kids still not going to school. There's a whole bunch of gun violence going across America, like crazier than ever before. And mind you, we see in the House, there's still a certain side that's still going against trying to fix the gun reform. You know what I mean? We're actually seeing people not doing the things that Black people wanted. And instead we got streets renamed. We got BLM painted on a street in Washington, D.C. And, you know, a couple stimulus checks. Like, there's not much that's changed to me really at all. And it's very sad. But slow and steady, I'm hoping that progressively we will get better as a society. but it's looking real bleak right now.
So why do you think those changes that you wanted haven't happened?
Because people just don't really give a shit about Black people. Like, the government has never really has told us time and time again that we really don't care about these inner cities. We try to make these little programs and we try to give crumbs to the inner city in order for people to make it out. Like, I just think time and time again, just this group of Black and brown people has just been maligned. Number one, by government, by society, by, you know, within our own community. It's all like a crabs. I don't even want to say that. It's more so just like a horrible ecosystem, a horrible cycle that just keeps repeating itself. You know, there's kid can't go to school, kid can't eat. Kid has to worry about whether his head is going to get blown off when he's walking home from school. You know, mom can barely feed him and her. And, you know, it just keeps going on and on and on again. And then what happens when you can't eat? What happens when you can't eat?
You try to take
it from somebody else. So what are people going to end up doing when they can't eat?
Crime.
Exactly. So this is the result we get. We're not fixing none of that. I haven't seen any actionable change really at all.
So when all of that quote performative bullshit was going on in 2020, how did you view that? Did you view that as like, oh, this is actual this is actual progress, or just kind of like an eye roll, like, oh, great, like what's that gonna do?
I literally said that. I was just like, especially when like the whole like people are arguing about like statues and stuff. Like, listen, take the statue down, whatever, cool. But like at the same time, mind you, like I would never be one to like say like, hey, we should keep a statue of like some racist human owner back in the day. But that doesn't make a structural change in society and feeding kids and feeding mouths and putting books in front of kids' faces and making them go to school and having them be properly educated so the cycle could end. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I know so this is a dangerous comparison I'm going to make, and I hope I don't fuck it up.
Yeah.
But so when I went to Berlin, and of all the places I've been to in Europe, Berlin, I thought was the most powerful. And what I admire so much about them is all throughout the city, you have these memorials basically dedicated to the Holocaust. And they don't, whereas us in the U.S., we don't really teach our kids what really happened to the Native Americans, what really happened to Black people. We tell some fabricated story or some fairy tale.
Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks.
Exactly. Like we tell 10% of what actually happened. Whereas in Germany,
more like 2%. But
they fully lean into what they did now. Like they know, they acknowledge what happened. And so all throughout the city of Berlin, you have just plaques everywhere just saying, like, here's what the Germans did. Here's why it's messed up. Here's where we're getting better. It's been just like this educational project for the last 80 years to try to, you know, make up or educate people so that that doesn't ever happen again in that place. We haven't done that in the U.S.
And it's funny you say that, because like the first time I really got educated on like real Black histories when I was at Temple, it was required of the journalism majors to take an African-American studies course. It actually inspired me to take up the minor actually in African-American studies. But like that course just like flipped my mind like crazy. I was like a freshman. I had a professor named Malefi Asante, I'll never forget. And he was just telling us like, yo, do y'all think, the first conversation we had was like, yo, do y'all think America's racist? And he's like, well, write it down. Like he told everybody, this class is probably like a lecture of like, you know, 50, 60 people, whatever. It's like, yo, everybody like write down, do you think America's like racist or whatever? And then like, most people are like, oh nah, like, you know, we live in like a pretty, you know, mixed society. Like everybody's cool with everybody. Cause think about it, you 18, 19, like you probably, you know, your neighbor's Black, whatever, your people's is white, y'all all hanging out together all the time. Y'all not really like looking at stuff like that, kind of like in that lens and that scope, especially coming from Philly where there's so many different walks of life, different backgrounds and stuff like that, people you meet. But you do, growing up, you still do see like racism, don't get me wrong. But like your day-to-day friends probably aren't really, you know, like that. And you probably shouldn't be hanging out with any dumbass racist kids in the first place anyway. But a lot of people was just answering that question like, oh, nah, like, you know, I think race has changed a lot. Like, I think we've made a lot of progress, blah, 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 blah. Like, granted, like, we had made progress from, like, Jim Crow, but it's just turned into other things. You see what I'm saying? Like, it's turned into the prison complex. It's turned into, you know, just you have to take 30 different leaps and bounds and steps to make it out of a rough, poor environment in order to actually be something. You hear about a certain ball player, oh, how he made it out the struggle, how he made it out the hood because he was athletically gifted. All right, what about the 50 other dudes that weren't gifted athletically than him? You see what I'm saying? Like, it's always just like some heroic effort to make it out of a bad situation. Like, why can't a kid from inner city Chicago make it out like you did from upstate New York into progressing, going to UAlbany, graduating in 3 years, getting that first job at ESPN, and, you know, making his way to the biggest sound network there is, the sound distributor there is out there right now? Like, why can't that be more common for people in lower economic statuses? You see what I'm saying? Like, it always just has to be a bigger leap, a bigger bound, a bigger, just a bigger climb to where you need to get to. So that's kind of where I'll put that answer at.
So you said, you know, we haven't made much change, if at all, since George Floyd, but that you still do have hope for the future. What gives you that?
You just kind of have to have hope, because at the end of the day, if you don't got no hope, then what am I just going to walk around and mope around and be like, oh, shit's never just going to change. Oh, well, F it. Like, yeah. I feel like this is just me being hopeful. I don't know what actual change is going to be made 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the line. This is just me being hopeful. I'm hoping there will be some actionable change in the future, hopefully sooner rather than later, because the way we're going right now, this is definitely not it. And it's going to be harder and harder for kids to make it out and do what they really want to do, just from what I'm seeing. I don't think we're going in a good direction at all as a country right now, personally.
Do you think, I mean, is there any difference between being in Trump's America versus Biden's America?
Is there any difference from being Trump's America versus Biden's America? Yeah. My thing is, like, I just can't root for, I don't like the whole system of, like, these old dudes that just, like, really, no, I'm just real shit. Like, like, these old dudes just that are completely out of touch and just don't understand the common man and what we need to change in society. Like, through Trump, we went through a freaking pandemic that had us stuck in our houses for, I don't know, damn near, what, 2 years or whatever. And we're still going through it. It's so bad that we have to act like it's gone. Right. And everybody just, seriously, we have to act like it's not existing, even though there's new cases every single day and we're still walking down the street. And then now we got the Biden issue where it's like, this man just went on Jimmy Kimmel. Meanwhile, there's a lady out here. There's women out here who can't feed their children, like, baby formula.
Right.
Like, there's people out here that can't afford some damn eggs because it's doubled in price. And he's answering questions of, oh, hey, how's the presidency going so far? Like, it's like, bro, like, what are we doing here? Like, can we get somebody that's actually in touch with the common people and really want to make change? I feel like a lot of these people in offices just really do it and are in it for themselves for selfish reasons. They're lobbied by a lot of outside corporations, big corporations that'll give them big money to support whatever they want to do. And it's so hard to just get a real honest person in offices that really want to make change for the community. And truthfully speaking, I haven't seen any type of, like, positive direction that we've gone in the last, I don't know, what, 6-7 years or whatever the case may be. Have you? Like, I haven't really seen much. Especially with the way it is right now. Like, I haven't seen much positivity at all. Like, we just think about what we just went through in the last, like, 3 years, right? We just went through having to walk around with masks, go into work environments where you can risk getting a disease that, or a sickness that might kill you or it might really harm you depending on what your underlying circumstances was, to now not even being able to afford to do anything now.
Right.
Not being able to afford to eat now. Like, everything's just, like, doubling. When you go to the gas pump, you're paying $100 for some gas. Like, does that not tell you that we need change completely? We need an overhaul completely.
Yeah.
Like, it can't be just on some, mind you, most people probably say, like, I'm a liberal because I lean, you know, mostly left towards left, left my whatever, left-minded things or, you know, more liberal.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like more on that liberal side. But truthfully speaking, I just want somebody who doesn't even look at like a label like that and will just put us in the right direction.
Just do the right thing.
That's what I'm saying. Like, we make that, don't we make that shit way more complicated than it has to be?
Yeah.
We make it way more complicated than it has to be, because it's like, oh, well, I need guns, gay rights, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, bro, like, can we just work into a society and have someone in there that we could just make everything fair for everyone so people can just freaking live? That's all I want. That's really all I want.
Yeah.
Really, that's it.
That's
simple. That's simple.
Things take... I'm somewhat cynical when it comes to government, because change takes so long from a government perspective. It takes, I mean, look at what's happened in the last 10 years. Sandy Hook happened in 2012, and we just had the equivalent thing. Nothing has changed. And think of how many lives have been lost to
gun shooting. Don't forget about Buffalo, too. Don't forget about Buffalo. That was just Buffalo. That was just like a week earlier.
And there's there's things in Colorado. Like, there's things happening all over the country. Like, take so long to happen. And so I'm just kind of like, all right, to hell with the government, like, making changes. Like, it, when it comes to race, improving race relations in America, like, I'm like, who cares about putting this in the government's hands? I'm just like, let's just be better on an individual basis, like, below level. The government. Yes, let's just take it upon ourselves to just treat everyone equally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Be nice, be kind,
but show Troy,
the people the way.
You know, that's absolutely way too easy for people to think that way, right?
Oh, of course.
This is America. That's
just optimistic.
No one's... I'm about to say, no one's rational enough to think in that way. Like, some person's fairness might be like, you're like, oh, this is absolutely abhorrent. You know what I'm saying? Like, people's morale spectrum is just so much different depending on your background.
Yeah.
Like it's crazy to me, you know? So I'm with you, because we and you, we probably kind of think more so alike anyway, but like, there might be some dude out in, you know, Montana or some shit like that, that might think completely different from how me and you feel. You know what I mean? So it's hard to get it. It's just too many people to get on the same page, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
It sucks. It sucks to say that, but
I know.
It's just real, right? Like,
I know. Whenever I go to Europe, like, you know, I'll run into a European, they'll ask about the American guy, they hear my accent. They're like, guys, like, what is going on over there? And I'm like, dude, America's like six different countries. Every region has its own identity, right? And they all have completely different values. Like, this, it's impossible to have the kind of country that we want, because it is so splintered, because we have six different countries in this country.
Exactly. There's just too many different minds, too many cooks in the kitchen, whatever you want to call it. It's too many opposing perspectives.
Yeah.
I don't think we can ever get on that like right groove. That's why I say I'm hopeful that we can as a society. I'm hopeful that we can, but I just, it's going to be tough, man. It's just way too many perspectives that just are like, they just all just clash with each other each and every single day. That's why I try to live my life as more so of like, treat every woman and man equal. Just say like, just show love, say what's up. Shake a hand. Yo, you need me help. Yo, you know, if you see somebody that, you know, is out on the street and they might not, they say like, hey man, can I get some change or something like that? And you're going to get some food, buy them a sandwich or something. Like, just do something nice for everybody. Like,
amen.
That's kind of like my perspective on everything. But of course, not everybody can think like me. And I'm not trying to like narcissist, but like, I'm just saying, like, not everyone will think in that way that I think.
Well, it is incumbent upon people like you and me and all members of this found generation here to try to bring about that change, so that we can try to live in the kind of country that we all want to live in, so that our kids can have a better future than the ones that we have right now.
100%.
Cliff, thank you so much for joining me. Incredible hearing about your story. You're full of knowledge and wisdom, and good luck with everything that you've got going on. And who knows, I might be in New York City in the near future.
Let's
so
it,
I will see you then.
If you come to New York City, we throw in the biggest party that the city's ever seen to get you acclimated to the city.